Welcome to the RevRec Gals podcast, where two consultants with over 30 years combined experience share stories about the implementation and challenges of revenue recognition accounting. I'm Susan.
And I'm Natasha.
And we are the RevRec Gals. Welcome to another episode of the RevRec Gals. Today's topic is cost incurred to obtain a contract. There are some costs that you incur as a company that aren't really directly related, but then there are others that are. So can you give us some background, Natasha?
Commonly speaking, people look at the guidance about costs incurred to acquire a contract under ASC 340, and they think commission guidance, which is true in a lot of ways. I think that's the biggest one. It's the most common one. It's probably the one we'll talk about the most today, but really it's any cost incurred to acquire a contract. And that really means an incremental cost that is only incurred because you signed and closed that contract in a way that you would not have incurred that cost if the contract didn't get signed. And it can be directly traced to a particular contract, not a population or a group of contracts. It's a one-to-one relationship. We can oversimplify that if we say it's all commissions. But the reality is that sometimes there's maybe more of an MBO structure, or maybe there's some cost that, yes, they're directly traced to a particular contract, but you would have incurred that cost if the contract didn't actually get signed and closed. And so it is really important to think about this really methodically and clearly, like what is actually being included in here and what's truly incremental and what's not.
So you're talking about what's truly incremental, what's not. The things we might rule out would be like travel expenses that the sales rep incurs.
That's a great example.
They're going to incur it whether the customer signs a contract or not. But their commissions obviously are going to be directly related because it's usually part of the calculation. But on top of that, there may be additional costs. There may be payroll costs, maybe additional taxes that you have to pay. And so that all has to be included in that cost.
I think that's a great point. And I think what is important to distinguish here is what would be paid, just like your travel expense example, no matter what. So payroll, you're going to pay payroll no matter what. If that sales rep closes zero deals, you still pay them their base salary. But payroll taxes, that's another great example of payroll taxes usually will incrementally increase as they earn more money. The trick is that at some point, you max out on certain tax, FICA. So there's certain ones where there's a max over time. And so you can't just apply a straight up plain old, what is it nowadays, 15.3% total, and like half of it is an employer or something, 7-point-something%. You can't just use a straight percentage like that, because in actuality, a lot of sales reps will max out of whatever that annual tax is.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Other expenses I think of on the not cost to incur a contract will relate to partners or to resellers. Are there particular benefits that they get? Maybe you give all your partners or all your resellers a couple days of training a year, or marketing materials that you would give them regardless of how much they ordered or when they ordered it. And so those would be ruled out. But it could be that you incent them for a certain sale and say, we'll give you an extra margin, or we'll give you some kind of benefit specific to closing a deal. Then you have to look at, is this a cost to obtain that contract?
That's a great point. And I think referral fees in general. So if there's a third party that is selling your contract, I think so many times people can think commissions. Oh, I know what my commissions are. I'm done. This is what I have to capitalize. And that's not true, because you may actually have third parties involved who are basically getting paid a referral fee, which is another form of a commission. And it's truly an incremental cost to selling that contract. I think another thing on top of that to think about is not all quote unquote commissions are actually incremental costs. When I say that, I mean in especially larger organizations, you might have SDRs, for example, that are qualifying leads and filling the pipeline for sales executives. These are often called commissions. but they aren't actually upon signing a deal, they're upon qualifying a deal or upon qualifying leads. Certain cold calls that are made that sort of progress a prospect from one level to the next, those employees that are doing that work may be entitled to a quote unquote commission, but that contract may or may not be signed. So I've seen contract plans for these types of individuals where there's a few different pieces going on. There is the spiff, maybe you would call it, or commission on a per prospect that gets progressed through their qualifying levels. And then if one of those are signed, they may be entitled to an additional commission for those, in which case they could be incremental. So you could have one individual that might have three or four different ways that they earn commissions. And some of them may be considered an incremental cost, like the commission as a percentage of an actual deal that's being signed, or even a fixed fee for a deal that's being signed that is truly being paid only because that deal was closed. Whereas they might also have other just spiffs for performance. They could have different metrics that they're being paid commissions on in the sales process that are not actually related to closing deals.
This goes back to a prior conversation we've had, I think a few times, on what is the definition of the word? So in this case, what is the definition of commission? Is it a commission for progressing it to the next level, or is it truly a commission because the deal was closed?
This all goes back to how you design the commission plans and how you think about incentivizing your sales organization to sell your product, to grow your business, to increase revenue, to increase bookings. And when you do that, there's a lot of different factors at play, and there's a lot of different levers that get put into those compensation plans. And it's honestly something that I think it should be part of the collaboration between the sales organization and the revenue organization, and certainly the people who are maintaining. So the people managing and calculating the commission program, so that everyone's on the same page to, okay, when the sales organization finalizes a deal or tracks the various metrics that go into a commission plan, revenue's receiving that for revenue bookings and revenue reporting and contract reporting. And the commission team, the commission calculation team, must also track all of those different metrics and appropriately report them to calculate the payments. I mean, this is why commission so often lives within the revenue or very closely adjacent to the revenue organization, because you want to have consistent conclusions on what you consider a booking and how it's being measured and what's being tracked, and make sure that the left side is talking to the right and the way you're coming to your conclusions are the same.
Yeah, and to complicate it is when you start having multipliers, when they get a certain volume, they may start to get 110% instead of 100% of the commission rate. And then also managers may get a portion. It may also generate a commission based on how their team does.
And I think the managers is where it gets really tricky, because sometimes it can be cumulative based on all the contracts and not really attributed to a single particular contract. So you really have to look carefully at how those commission plans are structured.
I also have people sometimes ask about some of the marketing benefits and whether those are cost to acquire a contract. Like if there are marketing funds that may be generated based on a level of sales. And so that's one that I think is tricky, because you have to look at it. Is it a cost to acquire, or is it variable consideration, or is it a marketing expense, depending on what it is and how it's paid out and when it's paid out and what's the criteria?
That's such a good reminder that sometimes you have to look where you didn't even think you had to look. So when people associate ASC 340 as a commission guidance, they're missing part of the story, because it could show up, these incremental costs could show up in a marketing development fund or some other program like you mentioned. And the only way to really know is to go into those agreements and read through the details to see, is this truly a cost that is only incurred when the contract is signed? And if so, does it meet the criteria for capitalization and amortization under this guidance? So that's a great point.
Speaking of capitalization and amortization, let's talk about the different methods or criteria calculations that would go into the actual recording and tracking of the cost.
This is where it gets interesting, because under the new guidance, when 340 came out, this was, in my mind, pretty disruptive to the way people had been historically doing it. In my mind, the way it had historically been done is you recognize or you incur a commission, and then you either expense it right away or you capitalize and amortize it over the life of the contract. There was a bunch of disparity in practice. I don't think that there was clarity, to be honest, on what the quote unquote right way to do it was. I saw people doing it both ways and auditors being fine with it. I mean, the good news is under the new guidance, there was clarity was brought. But the biggest thing is that this idea of the expected customer benefit period, the idea that you're not just going to do it over the contract, because if you're expecting to benefit from this commission over a longer period of time, this cost should not just be amortized over the life of this contract. It should be amortized over the life of that customer relationship. For clarity, what I mean here is that often when you look at commission plans, you'll have the, what I sort of refer to as the new customer sales organization, who are bringing in brand new customers to a company. They'll often get a higher commission rate than, let's say, an account management team, whose job is still to sell, but they're selling to a captive audience. They're selling to already existing customers. There's already an existing relationship. They've already been, quote unquote, won as a customer. There's still a commission associated with those upsells and the renewal work, but it's different than the level of effort that goes into bringing a new customer in, and typically will have a higher close rate with existing customers than you will with new customers. So those new customers get a much higher commission rate. When you think about it, the company is happy to pay a higher commission rate up front because there is an expectation this customer is going to stick around for a long time. While it may not be sustainable to pay a 10% commission rate off of every sale from a business model perspective, because that's a big chunk, it may make sense on your first contract, because the expectation is you'll continue to derive value from that customer over a long period of time based on that long customer relationship.
If I understand correctly, those first contracts or those first big deals, or it could even be a new project within a customer, maybe for a new division, those you have to look more at the economic life of the customer versus just the contract itself. In my mind, if you have a new customer and you have like a year of support, but your average customer life is 3 years because they tend to renew, then you're looking at a 3-year amortization. And so the question then is, what do you do in year two and year three? Because you do have that renewals team that's working on it. What do you usually see as the method for dealing with those renewals?
Your question is a good one, because if you take a step back, there's the substance of what's going on, which is kind of what I was talking about. But then practically, what the heck do you do with it? You know, what does that actually mean? And so just to make a very simple, well, hopefully simple, anytime I try to put numbers out there, it starts to get complicated in my head, but I'll try. Typically, if you have a new customer, the sales rep might get commissioned at 10% of the total sales contract. Let's just say, for discussion's sake. And let's say that 1-year contract is typically renewed at the end of the first year, and that commission goes to maybe an account management or a customer success manager or somebody else and within the organization. And they are typically commissioned, let's say, 3% of renewals. And so what you have is that first contract was commissioned at the 10%, and then the following contract was at the 3%. And probably thereafter is an additional 3%. And so what the guidance specifically does, it talks about, I think it's called commensurate. They talk about commensurate payments for those expected future contracts. And if they're commensurate, so if it were 10%, 10%, 10%, there's nothing to be done. There's no upfront payment that's happening associated with those future expected contracts. In this case, where you have 10% and 3%, the numbers are wildly different. So on a $100,000 contract, you're talking about 10,000 versus 3,000. The idea is that 10,000 or that extra 7,000 paid in that upfront contract should really be amortized over the period of time you expect to benefit, which could be a 3, 5, 7 year customer relationship. The guidance actually gives you like two different ways of doing it, where you can actually just, for ease, take the 10,000 or the 10% and amortize it over whatever your expected economic benefit period is, usually the customer life, like 3 or 5 years, or you can take the incremental, which in our case is 7% or 7,000, and amortize that over that period of time. I don't think it matters which one you do necessarily. I think it just matters that you're consistent and you choose one. And so I've seen different people prioritize differently. So some people have said, we don't like the idea of having bumpy commissions, because ultimately what ends up happening is if you have 10,000 and you amortize that over 3 years, then in the second and third year, you get an additional 3,000 and 3,000. That looks kind of funky. However, it's also more work to try and come up with the incremental and figure out how to split it out. For some companies, it may be really straightforward, and maybe their commission plans are 10% for all the new customer sales reps and 3% for all the existing. But nowadays, or at least from what I've seen, it's different. Every sales rep has a different commission rate. You know, some people are 9.2%, others are 8.6%. And then it's really hard to calculate that incremental piece in a reliable, consistent way across contracts.
The underlying essence of this is, just like with cost, we're trying to match up our cost to obtain the contract with our revenue. So in your example, that's all services. But if you have a portion of it that's hardware or software or something deliverable up front, typically you would take a portion of it up front.
So have you seen that a lot? Most of my clients, and I have some clients that have more upfront revenue, but most of my clients are very much over time. Have you seen them allocating their commission expense over two different periods?
I do. So I had a small client. They were small enough and young enough that we didn't have a great way of determining customer life. So generally, either customer life was about 5 years, but if the contract was longer than that, then we would use the longer. And what we would do is we would just take whatever value that sales rep earned, because there were only a handful, so it was easy enough to do. And we would take all the deals that they had brought in and say, well, this percentage was recognized in the current period, this percentage in the next quarter, and kind of in a way waterfall it out, and then just take that dollar amount and apply it to the same percentages. It was sufficient enough because it was materially right. That's how we were able to somewhat simplify those calculations.
Your example is of a customer that's small enough early enough that it's relatively manageable. What happens when you have so many transactions and so much activity that it feels impossible to figure this out on a contract by contract basis? Have you dealt with that with your customers or with your clients?
When the client's that big, that's usually a whole team that just deals with commissions. So I haven't dug into it as much.
I've had some clients where there has been enough volume that we'll do it on a portfolio basis, and we have to come up with what is materially correct. What's interesting is when you use that portfolio method and that practical expedient, you have to prove out that it's immaterial if you do it differently. So you almost have to calculate everything on a line-by-line basis in order to use it. The way that I sort of, I don't want to say got around it, but was able to avoid doing it on a line by line basis and really take the benefit of the practical expedient was by taking a subpopulation. So rather than for the whole quarter, looking at just 1 month, and then doing a little bit of a sensitivity analysis where we were able to say, okay, let's say we recognized it all based on the first date in the quarter when we went to amortize. You know, so if you set up your amortization schedule, typically you do it based on a contract specific date. But let's say if you take all the transactions in this month and you did it all by the first date of the month, how much is there a difference? Okay, now what if you did it by the last date of the month? How much is there a difference? This is our maximum possible difference. So if it wasn't material, it's not going to be material if we did it on a specific date, which are going to be spread throughout the month. And I think for any cost that you're amortizing over 3 to 5 years, to come up with something material there is almost hard. I do think this is a good opportunity for that practical expedient, because proving it out can actually be accomplished with a sensitivity analysis pretty easily, rather than having to actually go line by line and doing all the work anyway.
That's a great idea. I'll have to keep that in mind if anybody asks me to do a commission.
Well, it's also one of those ideas that almost come to you out of necessity, because doing it line by line just feels completely impossible. And sometimes actually what I've seen is there's a lot of really great systems out there now that calculate the commissions for you. Problem is you don't have that same level of transparency and visibility as you do in a spreadsheet. So coming up with the actual inputs and outputs can all of a sudden become really challenging. Getting that data out on a line by line basis where you can really understand it can be challenging, especially if it's done by a different team. Sometimes doing these high-level analyses just makes more sense.
You talked about the practical expedient of doing the portfolio method, but there's another practical expedient that if the contract life or the estimated life that you've assigned to this commission is less than 12 months, you can take it up front. But there are still challenges with that one, because that's assuming that everything's going to be delivered within those 12 months. If you have like a service that you're waiting for registration, or you're waiting for the project to begin, you may not be in the 12 months from when you actually booked or billed for that deliverable.
That's a good point, is you have to be real sure you're going to actually do it in 12 months. And I've had some companies where very clearly their services that they have are always done within 12 weeks. I mean, there's almost never, it's a maybe a rare exception where once that hasn't happened. And so they were pretty clearly able to make a policy that said professional services are delivered within 12 months. If it's a standalone professional services contract, we don't have to amortize it over a longer period than the initial contract.
Even better when they have it in the contract that says it expires after 12 months.
You know, interestingly, I did have another client who tried to go down the path saying that their contracts were all 1 year. But the problem was, is that sometimes you close a contract and the start date is 2 weeks later. So now you're over a year from when that contract or that cost was incurred, and you no longer meet that 12-month practical expedient. It's out there and it can be useful, but I do think you have to tread a little bit lightly there. I've had some people not use it for the original contract, but then use it for the renewals. Yeah, so often the renewals will work out just the way they do their business and their cycle, that the renewal will get triggered and the cost will get triggered on that same day. So it's always within 12 months. But again, sometimes that won't work, because if you're signing early renewals on a frequent basis, it won't work. Another sort of thing we didn't mention is non-typically commission earning employees who end up getting some sort of payment that's incremental to the cost of a contract. So much of the focus on commissions is in the sales organization and maybe the account management organization, but sometimes I will see a professional services or training team get some sort of spiff. Often, maybe it's not even a percentage of a contract. Maybe it's for every specific type of training or content that was delivered or signed, they'll get $1,000 for any sort of like, maybe there's a certain training program you're trying to promote, for example. And anytime that a contract is signed with that, you get an extra bonus. Because a lot of times the training or the professional services team will get brought in for those sales calls to help sell their product, which is their services and their training. And so they want to incentivize, hey, we want you to be incentivized to help sell these programs because they make our customers more successful. And we think it's an important part of overall success. But a lot of times people forget to look there because maybe it's not very big. Maybe it's sort of manually managed by their managers. Maybe there's someone in professional development leadership that's just sort of manually tracking these and then submitting for bonuses outside of the typical commission plan. And I think that is something to watch out for, because a lot of times people will just forget. Luckily, a lot of times those are within 12 months and we can apply the practical expedient anyway. It just reminded me of that, where there has been a time where I was working with a client that it was kind of, oops, surprise, we have more cost to of acquiring a contract.
Again, partnering with the teams all throughout the company.
That's right.
This concludes our episode. Stay tuned bi-weekly as we talk all things revenue recognition. You can be notified of new episodes and other information by following us on LinkedIn. Feedback and topic suggestions are always welcome through LinkedIn or by emailing us at revrecgals@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. The examples discussed are based on specific company dynamics. Check in with your auditors before making changes to your current processes. Specializing in revenue recognition may result in employment for life. Please consult your friends and family before pursuing this career.